paid my dues time after time.
Oh, God.
I've done my sentence.
We're going to have a running theme in today's show.
Should have pulled it. I'm going to be sick by the end of the show.
By the end of the show? Yes, we are the champions. We all know what this means, right? We all know what this means now that the Philadelphia Eagles have won the Super Bowl for the first time ever. I don't quite know how I'm going to be able to contain myself to talk about hockey for the next however long this podcast takes, because the Eagles have won the Super Bowl. Welcome to the show. It's From the Press Box on Tuesday, February 6th, 2018. I'm your host, Amy Johnson, joined, of course, by my co-host, Rick Stevens. And I am a Philadelphia Eagles fan. Rick is a Minnesota Vikings fan. And I get to play today. We are the champions because we beat Tom Brady and the Patriots.
I always say I'm thrilled to be here. And usually mean it. but I don't know. I mean, hate's too strong a word. But no, it's appropriate. I hate Boston sports teams.
Okay.
Just despise the Bruins. And most Canadians fans would agree. So it extends to the other teams too, the Red Sox, the Celtics, and the Patriots. And so I'm happy enough, I guess, that the Patriots were beat. Although it should have been the Minnesota Vikings at home at U.S. Bank Stadium. But anyway.
Would you have beaten the Patriots?
Of course.
Okay. But it wasn't. It was the Eagles, and they did, in fact, beat Tom Brady and the Patriots, and I don't know if my feet have touched the ground yet. I was online immediately yesterday ordering up all of my Super Bowl championship gear. It is en route to my post office box. I will continue to be obnoxious all week because I'm still kind of in a state of shock. So there you have it. I'm a little happy. A little happy today, a little happy this week. I do want to say that my true love for the sport of hockey and for my job as the lead correspondent at the AHL Report can never be put into question due to the fact that instead of going to the Super Bowl parade in Philadelphia on Thursday, I am instead going to travel to Utica, New York to cover the Laval Rocket.
I want to go to Utica.
Allow me to repeat, instead of going to the Super Bowl parade an hour away from me in Philadelphia, I am going to get in my car and drive to Utica, New York, because I love hockey and I love the Laval Rocket and I love my job and I love all of you out there who follow along with our reports. And so that's where I will be. So don't ever say I'm not a dedicated, dedicated journalist.
You know, Max Pacioretty in the media scrum today was asked if he will be attending the Super Bowl parade as the Canadians are in Philadelphia on
That's right.
on Thursday.
They are.
They play Thursday night. He said, well, the Canadians were all rooting for the Eagles, if only to cancel the morning skate because of the parade.
Yeah, there's no way they're getting down to the rink that morning.
Well, and that's what he said. He doesn't know the arrangements yet. And you know, where they're staying. They hope it's not at the Ritz or wherever that canopy collapsed.
Yeah.
And he said, I thought it was funny because he said, At first, he said that he was cheering against Brady because he wanted somebody else to win. And it's kind of, you know, and he's from the general area, you know, in general.
Okay.
Sort of. He said he was cheering against Brady, but he said, let's just hope that the parade is tame so that we have smooth sailing to the game on Thursday night.
Like, well, here's a news flash. The parade is not going to be tame. It's just not going to be tame. And I imagine if the team is staying downtown, which is where most of the hotels are, which is right in the downtown core, right near City Hall, right on Broad Street. And the parade is scheduled, I think, for 11 or 11:30. I guarantee you, I there are plenty of people I know who are going to the parade. People are going to be getting their spots on Broad Street in that downtown core probably by 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning that day. The Archdiocese of Philadelphia has already said schools closed that day. I think most of the public schools are closing that day. I think most offices are closing that day in Philadelphia. So it's going to be a parade all the way down Broad Street, right through the center of town. So the Canadians will probably get a pretty good look at it from their hotel.
Yeah,
I just wouldn't recommend venturing
nap,
outside.
Right?
Yeah, there's no napping. There's not going to be any napping.
Question is, what are they going to, they lubed up the light poles with Crisco after the division champion. That didn't work. They tried motor oil this time. That didn't work. That didn't keep them off the light standards. So what's in store for Thursday? I'm afraid to ask.
I haven't actually looked at the press release that came from City Hall today yet, about how things are happening on Thursday. I would imagine at this point they're just going to say, screw it. If you want to climb the lamppost, then just climb the freaking lamppost. The amount of money we're spending in Crisco and motor oil and man hours to grease them all up is apparently not working. And listen, I will say, this will be my one soapbox moment. I'm a Philadelphia sports fan. Everybody who knows me knows that. Phillies, Eagles, Flyers. Say what you want about Philadelphia sports fans. Yes, we've had some notorious stories about awful fans doing awful things. And all I have to say about that is every city has its bad eggs. I know Philly seems to have more than usual, but you know, let's talk about how fans set fire to Montreal in the past. You know, there's every city has its bad eggs. Every city has its scenarios where you get mob mentality and a bunch of drunk people, and they're going to do really stupid things. So just let the city of Philadelphia enjoy their parade on Thursday, however Philadelphia wants to enjoy it. And if that's just 8 hours of complete debauchery, well, then there's nothing more Philly than that.
And then drop the puck.
I'll be curious to see how many fans make it to the Wells Fargo Center that night, because I have a feeling most of them are going to be passed out at that point. So I don't know. Anyway, this
but
is
you'll
a
be
hockey
in Utica.
Podcast. I will be in Utica. We'll touch on that here in a little bit as we're going to talk about. We're going to kick things off now that I've gotten a little bit of that Super Bowl madness out of my system. We're going to talk a little bit about the Rocket only had one game last week, and it was a noteworthy one. We'll certainly talk about that, break that down a little bit, hit on some injuries and some signings, call-ups, and also then take a look at the week ahead as they continue their road trip. We're going to touch on some AHL news. We have a new player of the week. We have some interesting just thoughts and comments on player development and what it's like to play in the AHL, the ECHL, and you know, what it takes to work up to those NHL levels. We have also, of course, the top five, which is always very fun. One of the most favored segments by our listeners. And with the Olympics starting this week, we have a special Olympics edition of Top 5 that you don't want to miss, where we're going to break down, Rick and I are going to break down our top 5 favorite Winter Olympic events. And I'm going to put this out there right now. I should run a poll on Twitter, you know, where will figure skating fall on that lineup for Rick? Because I'm sure it's got to be near the top somewhere.
Yeah.
But Rick, we gotta kick things off by talking about the Laval Rocket. And they had one game last week after their All-Star break. They played on Saturday afternoon in Toronto. They played the Marlies. I believe they traveled to Toronto on Thursday, practiced on Friday, and then played a 4 o'clock game against Toronto, in which Toronto had actually played in Rochester the night before on Friday and didn't get back to Toronto till like 2:30 in the morning. So it was a really short turnaround for Toronto. And so obviously with the Rocket really well rested, coming off of a nice respite with the All-Star break, not traveling the night before, settled in, those kinds of things. It's quite natural that we would have expected that they would have lost 7-1 to the Marlies, right? That's to be expected.
I guess that's the most disappointing, is that you know, they had a light load. They had time off, at least the two players that didn't go to the All-Star festivities. You know, there was some of the players got away and got some sun, or at least got some rest, and should have come in with a lot of energy, a lot of focus, a lot of determination. And I don't know, they didn't seem to have any of that. And it's not as if, you know, it was a lack of discipline, which has been a problem. You know, the penalties, there weren't that many of them, but even so, there was only one power play goal by the Marlies, six even strength goals. You know, you can't necessarily target any particular line or defensive pairing, or it seemed, you know, all the players were, you know, a minus two or so for the game. It wasn't as if anybody was particularly bad. It was just everyone was lethargic and did not seem ready to play the game.
No, you know, the Marlies were all over the puck. They were controlling the pace. They were getting shots off. I mean, Laval found themselves down 4-0 at the end of the first period, before the first period was over. Not the way you want to start a game, especially against such a powerhouse team that like Toronto has this year. Now, granted, Yannick Veilla and Matt Tarmina were both out of the lineup, as was Nikita Sherbak. Those are three names that you don't want out of your lineup. But you have to be able to play with the roster that you have. And, you know, McCarron tried to step in and drop the gloves with Andrew Nielsen, try to rile things up at the end of the first period, see if he can get some energy on the bench. If it did anything, it didn't last long, because the Marlies scored again in the second period. Thankfully, only one goal in the second period. And to Sylvain Lefebvre's credit, he kept Charlie Lindgren in net. He let him play the entire game. I'm sure Charlie wanted to stay in. Knowing Lindgren and his work ethic. And then they scored a couple more goals in the third period. Marcus Eisenschmidt, thankfully, knocked off Pickard's shutout attempt very late in the third period to get them one goal, but it was kind of a consolation prize at that point. Just defensively, they didn't look good. They had their moments. They had times where they were out shooting their opponent. You know, it's not that systems were breaking down or anything. They seemed to always be a stride or two behind the puck. You know, there was the Soshnikov scored the second goal of the game in the first period. And it was one of those things where the puck kind of came through the slot. And I believe it was David Brohl and maybe Eric Jelena that were kind of right in that area. And there just wasn't a quickness as quick to get to that puck, that loose puck through the slot. And sure enough, it, you know, the Marlies scooped it up. It was just those kinds of things where they seemed to be a step behind all afternoon. Sylvain Lefebvre was apparently quoted after the game as saying something to the effect of that was their worst loss of the season, and it was. You know, they went down 7-0 and managed to get one in the net before the end of the game, but not the way, you know, especially as far back in the standings as they currently are. They're in sixth place in the North Division right now with 41 points. So now the Belleville Senators are now a point ahead of them with 42. And the Crunch are way up there in the fourth position with 56 points. So starting a road trip against all divisional opponents, this is not the way they wanted to start things, especially after having had that week off.
Having that week off and thinking, okay, All-Star break's over. We have to go 30 games left. We have to go on our run. And just starting that, and I mean, yes, I understand there's a couple of moral victories with Eisenschmied breaking the shutout and McCarron, what he did, but they need points. The moral victories are meaningless right now. And as you said, they've dropped below the Senators. We talked about the Rocket chasing the Comets and for the last playoff spot, and now the Comets, given their 8 wins in ten games, they've leapfrogged the Crunch. So it's as you said, it's 15 points behind the Crunch. So 29 games left, a possibility of 58 points. That both the Comets and the Crunch are on like a 600 winning percentage pace right now. Mm-hmm. If they maintain that pace, if those two teams maintain the pace at 600, Laval needs 50 out of their remaining 58 possible points to overtake them, which is, you know, 858. It's a ridiculous number.
Right.
And it's not going to happen. It's just, let's be honest. I mean, not much changed in that one game, but the way the loss had and everything got put into focus, you know, playoffs are out of reach and they have to reset their focus for the remaining 29 games and what they want to get out of the rest of the season, both the players and the coaching staff.
Yeah. As we mentioned, you know, there are some injuries. Yannick Veilla is out, I believe, with a lower body injury. Nicky Petty got injured Friday morning, apparently in practice in Toronto, and was sent to Montreal for further evaluation. So he is day-to-day. And Matt Tarmina apparently is also visiting with the Montreal team doctors as well with an upper body injury. So that's not great news. Nikita Sherbak, of course, called up with the Montreal Canadiens, and Claude Julien was noted today as saying that if Sherbak continues to perform the way he did fantastically in his two games that he played over the weekend, that he likely won't be sent back down to Laval again if he continues to play in that fashion. So in the meantime, you know, every guy who's on the roster for Laval is playing. And so some PTOs needed to be signed over the course of this week. And that happened yesterday. Two guys from the Brampton Beast were signed to a PTO, Chris Leveille forward and Matt Petgrave on the defense. Both were signed to a PTO. So they, I believe, will have already probably, since Brampton's just down the road from Toronto, they likely have already joined the team. And it'll be interesting to see how things rebound. They now play in Binghamton tomorrow night. They play in Utica on Friday night, and they play in Syracuse on Saturday night. To say that those three games are must-win games is an understatement, especially the Friday and Saturday games against Utica and Syracuse. And so, you know, they've had a couple of days that they stayed in Toronto and practiced, and let's see what they can get going here. But as you say, they really need to kind of buckle down and focus on the task at hand and what needs to get done.
Yeah, Petgrave is a nice addition. We saw him. He joined the Beast. I think it was late in the season last year. We saw him in the playoffs in Reading, and very mobile kind of defenseman, bit offensive minded, and it'll be interesting to see what he does at this level. And it's always nice for those guys to come up and get a chance to play. Willie Coren was up in December for about a month and didn't get into the lineups, but I expect with the injury situation, we'll see at least one, if not both of the players you mentioned in the lineup sometime this week.
Absolutely. And as we mentioned, we will be on the road covering all three of these games. So we will be in Binghamton, in Utica and Syracuse. So be sure to follow along at the AHL report. For all of those live updates, we'll have interviews with the players and of course, Coach Sylvain Lefebvre, as well as photographs and things of that nature. So we'll be on the ground with the team and hopefully reporting on some wins this weekend. I know they certainly would like to see some wins on that summary sheet, and we'd like to be celebrating some wins with the fans for sure. Should be an interesting. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, in addition, you mentioned AHL.report for the game reports. Mm-hmm. I think fans would be interested to hear. We posted some interviews, extended interviews, let's say, with both Chris Terry and Matt Taramina. They were collected and compiled at the All-Star weekend, and there you have time where you can spend a bit extra time, and it's not only talking about the particular game, or they did talk about the All-Star, but also they got into a variety of other topics, and so there's some extended clips there if you go to AHL.report, the interviews that you had with those two guys. They were very generous in their time over All-Star weekend, and they had some interesting things to say.
They did. And those are that is a video that you can watch. That's not just audio clips. That is a fully produced video that you can watch with the two of them. And we do thank them for their time. So, yes, be sure to head over to AHL.report and check that out. Moving along to the AHL, the CCM AHL Player of the Week for the league is, of course, this seems to happen quite often that it's always someone that the Laval Rocket faced in the previous week. And that is the case again today. It's Toronto Marlies forward Andreas Janssen, who we did also see at the All-Star game as well. He had 2 goals and 3 assists for 5 points in Toronto's 2 games last week. One of those goals and one of those assists came on Saturday against Laval. And he's actually been doing very well. He's tied for second in the AHL with 22 goals. And at the time the press release had a team best 37 points in 41 games for the Marlies this season. So Janssen's doing quite well for Toronto and is the player of the week.
And you mentioned we saw him at the All-Star game, that the 3-on-3 round robin challenge, the last game, that crazy game, the Atlantic division versus the North, where the Atlantic went up and then the North came back with 4 goals. It was Janssen that got the game winner. I think Taramina got the assist on that. Certainly Janssen jumped into Taramina's arms, and we have a photo of that on AHL.report. That was just an insane game. And then they went on to beat the Pacific in the championship.
They did. And I should note as well, we spoke last week about how Brian Gianta had signed a PTO with the Rochester Americans as a warm-up for the Olympics. And the game that the Toronto Marlies played on Friday night before they went back home to face Laval on Saturday was the game against the Amerks. And while Toronto did ultimately win that game, I did want to note that Brian Gionta had a goal in that game and was third star for the night. So stick tap to Brian Gionta. It's been a while since he's played in the AHL, but he made an impact, and now heading off to Pyongyang for the Olympics. So good for Brian Gionta. We don't have a full-fledged Rick Stevens journey through time of where are they now this week. I think there's one coming next week, but I did have a mini one, a little player update that kind of hit the news today. We've talked, actually, he's one of our Where Are They Now players from earlier in the season who has made a change. Mr. Morgan Ellis, for those of you who remember him from the St. John's Ice Caps, very upstanding defenseman, has been playing for Skellefteå all season long. He had a one-year contract with them, but both parties agreed to end that contract. And Morgan is now going to finish out the remainder of the season with Färjestad. Färjestad BK. In fact, he's already there. He's already taken place, I believe, in their practice today. And I believe as far as Färjestad's goes, he will be playing in, I think, tomorrow night's game. So he's finishing out his season, just moving over to a different team there in the Swedish league. And we wish Morgan Ellis best of luck with his new team as he finishes out the season wearing a new logo.
Good for him.
Yeah.
What a tremendous guy. Tremendous, tremendous guy.
Absolutely tremendous guy. You know, and he's one. This is something that I will tell anyone who asks, you know, why we do what we do and why we spend the time that we spend and the expenses and the effort and the grind of covering AHL and ECHL level hockey. And frankly, yes, it's the love of the game. To work in this industry, to work in hockey, you have to love the sport and you have to love it with every fiber of your being. And I know I can speak for all of us here at the AHL Report that's the case with all of us. But a lot of it, too, is the admiration that we have for the players who play at the minor league level, whether it's AHL, whether it's ECHL, And even for guys like Morgan Ellis who have moved on from those leagues and are now playing in the European leagues where it's still a grind. And Rick, I know we just want to touch a little bit on what it means. You know, there's so much people. Nikita Sherbak got called up this weekend and delighted to see that he had two spectacular games. He looked comfortable. He looked confident. He looked strong. And kind of going and fans went nuts. Fans were, oh, well, this is the Nikita Sherbak we've been waiting to see. Well, Nikita Sherbak is pretty young and we've been touting his talents for years now, but just because fans and media haven't seen his skill necessarily completely transition to the NHL game in that time, it's easy to say, oh, well, he's not ready, or oh, he's a bust, or oh, he's not going to ever be anything. But it's when you watch them work their butts off day in and day out at the minor league level. And some players, you know, yeah, they're playing in the AHL. Some of them bounce back and forth between the AHL and the ECHL, which is another huge component of staying in the mental game that you have to deal with. Sometimes guys get buried in the ECHL, even though they don't deserve to necessarily be there. It is a grind every day. The travel, the mindset of focusing on what you need to focus every day, knowing that you have a dream of making it to the NHL. Or for some guys who are buried in the ECHL, they have a dream of just making it up to the AHL, up to the American League. And it's really easy to focus on the big names and the big prospects. And it's really easy to forget about the guys who are sometimes unnoticed. And after, I really don't mean to bring up the Super Bowl win again. Did you know that the Philadelphia Eagles won? But after the game, Travis Kelce was one of the most emotional players. And he spoke at length in tears about how, you know, when he was 18, he didn't get a college scholarship for football, and he went undrafted, and people told him at every turn, you're never going to make it. And yet there he was, Super Bowl champion at the end of the day on Sunday. And it, between that juxtaposed with getting very frustrated with people all weekend saying, I guess Nikita Scherbak does know how to play hockey. I got really frustrated with that. And I have a pinned tweet on my Twitter account now that I put out, I don't know, like either Saturday or Sunday, something like that. And you can find me at Flyers Roll on Twitter if you'd like to go see it or share it or whatever. But it says this: player development is vital. I'm going to repeat that for a minute. Player development is vital. We all know that. The rest of my tweet says, but it's not just improving hockey skills. It's building confidence, putting players in positions to succeed, explaining mistakes, advising them how to improve, reminding them it takes time, encouraging them the whole way. Don't tear them down. And part of player development is all of those things. You have to take care of the whole player, not just the physical body and what it can do on the ice. And furthering along with that, Rick, you kindly brought to my attention this week an article written by Scott Wheeler over at The Athletic, where Scott embedded himself with the Brampton Beast for a number of months at the beginning of the season, culminating in going on a 3-3 road trip with them, which details, you know, and a lot of people who have read it seem to have the reaction of, wow, I never realized how much guys at these levels in these leagues have to sacrifice and how hard life is to be a minor league player. And it's just something I thought we could just touch on briefly today, because it's something that they deserve the recognition for what it takes to get up every day and lace up the skates when you're not playing in the NHL.
It's at whatever level, it's remarkable to be in pro hockey. It's remarkable to get paid for doing something you love. It's remarkable whether you're at the ECHL level, AHL level, NHL level. These guys are all athletes and they all have a dream. And as you say, that dream can vary. And it isn't just as easy as snapping your fingers and you get drafted one day and you're in the lineup next day and you're scoring 20 goals. And, you know, so when you see that fans, you know, they were ready to write, they've been ready to write Nikita Scherbak off for two years. I mean, at the beginning of the year, he'll never make it. Might as well cut your losses. There's a couple of phrases that just eat me inside when I see them posted on Twitter. And, you know, it's from fans who sit there and they're drinking their beer and they're, oh, okay, I'm going to write something on Twitter and get rid of this guy. If you can get a bag of pucks for him, you've won the trade. And the other is that these guys don't care. Every single one of them cares.
They do.
You don't know the sacrifice. You have no idea the sacrifice that has to be made. And that goes back to junior hockey when kids are in their teenage years are billeted out to families they don't know. Some speaking a language that is different than their host family and put into just. And all this pressure and still they do it because they're pursuing their dream and those guys at the ECHL level where there's no guarantees, there's no, you know, they don't make a lot of money. They don't have any job security. And one day, Matt Petgrave this month is playing for the Brampton Beasts, and the next day he's loaned out to the Toronto Marlies. And now, as you announced, he's going to be putting on a sweater for the Laval Rocket. And he doesn't know if he's still going to have a job with the Beast when he goes back there. The challenges, the obstacles that not only the players, but the coaching staff and the support staff and every single one of them, the sacrifices that they make, the money that they give up, the lack of sleep, the travel, the everything. And you mentioned Travis Kelce, and that's what I liked about him. You know, he mentioned two quotes. One was a Rocky quote, and one was one that his grandfather gave him. And both of them were about persistence. And he was talking about the ability that when you're knocked down, when obstacles are put in your way, when it's really tough, and you just keep moving forward, you just take that step forward. It applies to having the insane idea of a startup media company and just keep moving forward when there's obstacles, but that's a whole other issue. But you know, that article, I think, in summary, just points to the extreme levels that these guys go, the extreme sacrifice they make in pursuit of their dream. And if hockey fans read it, understood it, talked to some of these players, they wouldn't be making the just silly comments that they're making about a lack of caring, because these guys care. They care a lot.
They really do. And you know, it's easy from the outside looking in to say, oh, well, it's just all part of hockey. The grind is just, it is what it is. But physically, they're drained, especially when they're on the road. They are drained. I mean, imagine spending hours and hours and hours and hours on a bus and having to have morning skates and video review sessions and team meetings and playing games, and maybe trying to find an hour or so here and there to sleep in between, especially when you have, in this instance, a 3-3 where you're playing 3 games in 3 days on the road in 3 different cities that are hours apart by bus. And you're dealing with weather issues, and you're dealing with mechanical breakdowns, and you're dealing with, you know, all sorts of things. The mental fitness it takes just to keep your head in the game, dealing with all of that, is just one of the many obstacles that these guys face every day. You know, they put their bodies through immense torture, you know, the bumps and the bruises and the dings, it adds up by the end of the season. And not to mention personally what they're sacrificing, what their families are sacrificing. You know, a lot of them don't get to see their families very often. Coaches don't necessarily get to see their families all that often if they're coaching in a city that's different from their hometown, and their family, maybe because they have kids in schools that they didn't want to take them out of, maybe their family stayed in their hometown and the coaches are coaches living in the town where the team is that he's coaching. There is so much sacrifice physically, mentally, emotionally, personally, and sometimes professionally, financially. You know, guys in the lower leagues do not get paid a lot of money. They really don't. Just the sacrifices as a whole that every guy who plays professional hockey and works in professional hockey makes on a daily basis, to me, they all deserve like a medal, because the only thing that keeps you going through that is your love of the game and the fact that you have a dream that you're not going to give up on. I have the utmost respect for players who I absolutely respect professional players who are playing in the National Hockey League, because what they can do at that elite level is spectacular. It's entertaining. It's awe inspiring. But I have an incredible amount of respect for the guys who play in the AHL, the ECHL, junior hockey, the European leagues, who are just grinding it out every day, trying to make their dreams come true. And I have to tip my hat to Scott Wheeler over at The Athletic. If you have a chance to read the article, I highly recommend it. It's called In One, My Four Wild Days Trapped in Minor League Hell with the Brampton Beast. It is a very detailed accounting of what it's like to be on the road in the ECHL. And it's not pretty. It's really not pretty. Congratulations to him on a very fine piece of journalism. It's very well written. And for bringing to light something that doesn't, frankly, Rick, get talked about very often. And that's what the real sacrifice means for these guys.
You know, we cover the Brampton Beast, not only at AHL.report, not only because they are an affiliate of the ECHL affiliate of the Montreal Canadiens, and not only because, you know, they feed players to both the Belleville Senators and the Laval Rocket so that we can follow their progress along, but just for these kinds of reasons. Yes, there are those rare occasions when the ECHL player makes it to the NHL and it's a you know, a David Desharnais Cinderella story. But more importantly, to just shed some light on and give these players recognition. We do weekly reports, but Mike Reese, who goes to Brampton and covers the game, does player profiles to give these guys some recognition. And in the article you mentioned, it was a 3-3, and that's what people don't realize. And I've said it many times that I don't understand how these guys can do a 3-3. You know, back to backs are tough in the NHL, but 3-3 at the ECHL level, particularly in Brampton, where the most common this season has been a 7 o'clock game Friday evening in Brampton, a 7 o'clock game on the road, and they're road game is I think the closest one is probably Glen Falls, 6 hours away. And so they're getting back early in the morning. And then the Sunday game is always a matinee. So they having, you know, no sleep, very little recovery time. And then not only that is, you know, as it was mentioned, the tradition in Brampton is on the Sunday, a Sunday afternoon game, is a fan skate following the game. So imagine the 3-3 getting no sleep the entire weekend and losing the game, or maybe losing all three that weekend, and then having to put on your happy face and do a fan skate afterwards. These guys are remarkable, and they only deserve you know, criticize if you want their performance or but don't ever tell me that they don't care, because that's just nonsense.
Complete nonsense. And we give a lot of respect and admiration to every player, coach and staff member that we cover and we work with, because we know how hard it is and the sacrifices that they're making. We understand that and are amazed that they do what they do. Make sure you keep that in mind the next time before you pick up your phone and feel like firing off a tweet. Just keep that in mind the next time. All right, well, on that note, I know that took a bit of a serious turn, but you know, it's just one of those things that doesn't get talked about very often. So we're happy to be given the opportunity to kind of expand on those thoughts as it's circulating on social media right now. It's something that people are talking about. But we want to move on, of course, to the top five for this week, because talking about guys who are working hard and trying to realize their dreams are some folks this week who are heading to South Korea for the Winter Olympics. In particular, hockey players who probably never thought they were going to have a chance to represent their team in the Olympics, with the NHL bowing out this year. So it's very exciting. While the game will be very different, the tournament will be very different at the Olympics this year without NHL players there. I'm very excited for the guys who are getting to go and represent their country. Many of them, either college players or minor leaguers or European league players, who probably never thought that they would ever have a shot at playing in the Olympics, Rick, because of course the NHL guys get to go. So speaking of hard workers, kudos to everyone who's heading to the Olympics this week. And we should talk about some Winter Olympic events.
The 225-member-strong Canadian team are to be feared at the Winter Olympics.
Brian
Giunta,
done
a lot of
captaining
gloating
the American. Brian Giunta is going to bring home a gold medal for the U.S.
You know what's interesting about the American team? Now that we're into this Olympic thing, you know what's interesting to me? Do they know that these guys, that this is the Winter Olympics, right? They understand that? Do they understand
that? Yeah.
Because I heard that for the opening ceremonies, and I mean, yes, it's supposed to be a little bit cooler than normal, you know, at these Olympics, but that Ralph Lauren, how do you say that? Lauren?
That's correct. Yeah. Some people say Ralph Lauren, some people say Ralph Lauren.
Ralph Lauren. Ralph, when he was designing the U.S., the Team USA garb, the opening ceremony special parkas that they will be wearing, just thought, oh, geez, these poor athletes, it's going to be cold there. The Team USA will be wearing battery-powered parkas to keep them warm during the opening ceremonies. The poor little things that are out in the elements.
I'd wear a battery-powered parka. I would have gladly taken one at New Era Field in Buffalo while I was covering the U.S.-Canada game.
Well, sure, but you're not a Winter Olympic athlete. They should be used to it. They train outside, don't they?
Not going into the opening ceremonies, you know, by running a five-mile sprint first. Cold.
I think they know how to stay warm. They're Winter Olympic athletes. Thanks, Ralph, for that, though. Yeah.
It won't matter when we take home more medals than you.
The Canadians, they follow the Bud Grant, speaking of football, the Bud Grant tradition. Minnesota Vikings, famous coach who would not allow heaters on the bench. And Bud went out in a sleeveless polo shirt in Minneapolis when they were playing outdoors.
Nice.
Bud was a tough old guy. Anyway, no battery powered anything for Bud.
How's that working out for the Vikings?
They'll be fine. Just wait till they get Drew Brees next year. Then you'll be crying.
Okay. All right. Oh my goodness. Okay. Top five Winter Olympic events. Tweet us at the AHL Report. We want to hear what your favorite Winter Olympic events are that you enjoy watching. I guess I have to preface this by asking if you have rules and regulations and exclusions and disclaimers.
Most certainly.
Oh, here we go.
I do have an honorable mention, which I'll get to. But as far as the exclusions, this one's easy. This one's super easy.
Really?
Anything that has pipe in the name of it is out. Forget about it. Any of your X Game crap. It's let me put sport.
Don't say X game crap.
In quotations. Any of that nonsense stuff, forget about it. It's not going to be on my list. It's not.
Have you ever strapped your feet onto a snowboard and tried to do anything?
Listen, I was a snowshoe instructor. So talking about strapping things onto your feet and having to, yes, I was a snowshoe instructor.
Okay.
But the other exclusion is going to be any judged events. Because it's just so, well, not only is it not a, it's subjective. And then it opens it up to the scandals that we had from the French judge a few years ago with was it ice dancing or pairs figure skating, Brasseur and Eisler, and they got, and then found out the Russians paid them off, and they got their gold medal months after the investigation and the
you
the
see I told you
revealed.
Rick was going to be up on all of the figure skating news. I knew it.
Yeah, so just eliminate it. So you know, no judged events are you will find in my list.
Huh.
No.
But you have an honorable mention.
Well, having said that, and it's the reason it couldn't make it into my top five, but this is kind of a judged event, is it not? Because they get kind of a combination of the I'm talking about the ski jumping, because they get distance distance plus they get style points or something for their, you know.
Wouldn't you consider
the
that
telemark
ski
land?
Sort of
no,
a,
they don't.
Sort
they don't
of
do
a,
the telemark anymore.
Sort of like a, isn't that ski jump sort of pipe esque?
No,
that,
of course not.
Has
no, it's just morons to go off. No, I remember back to the, you know, the Big Thunder days, Thunder Bay, Ontario. They built the Big Thunder jump, the 120 meter and the 90 meter, and Lake Placid they had the same. Now they don't even call it the 120 and the 90 meter. I think that changed somewhere, Turin somewhere along the line. They've done things to make it safer. It used to be kind of fun. Eddie the Eagle, who, you know, just about killed himself every time off the ski jump. So I'm going to give ski jumping. It didn't get into my top five, but there's enough danger and athleticism to give it my honorable mention.
Hmm. So what
Even
did
it's
make
kind
it
kind of a partially judged event?
Well. So what did make it as your number five?
Number five is an event that I don't get. I don't understand, but it fascinates me. And that's the biathlon. Like who decided that cross country skiing and target shooting should be put together? It doesn't make any sense, but I give credit to those guys who, you know, they're, I don't know what the distance is that they have to cross-country ski, but their heart rate is going a million beats a minute, and then they have to stop and calm themselves down and take out those targets. And and it's often, you know, it's the Norwegians that are good in this, and it's often like a Norwegian military officer that they bring in off of the, they call him in off the mountain every 4 years, and he comes in and
well,
yeah.
That's just, I mean, you're
protecting
Canadian.
The homeland for the rest of the time, and then he comes and competes in the Olympics. I find it fascinating.
You're Canadian, but you say I don't know who decided this should be an event. Well, I mean, come on, it's like the old, you know, it harkens back to hunting and you know, up there in the cold Canadian forested tundra, and you know, you have to snowshoe or cross country ski or whatever out there and chase your prey down and then take dinner home. Isn't that something?
Yeah, so would you have an event that includes snowshoeing and beaver traps? Is that what you're saying?
Apparently, you could be an instructor. So
that I could be on both, actually.
That's a conversation for another day. Okay, so my number five actually has a new component added to it for this year. It's not just the men's and the women's. They're also doing mixed doubles starting this year. And that is curling. And I know some people are like, oh my God, curling. I think curling is quite entertaining. And I think it's the Hungarian or the Swedish men's team who come up with the most outrageous outfits to wear. It's always entertaining. Looks like something straight out of like a 1970s Sears catalog. But
I'm just going to give you an advance here that curling is my number three. And join you in the, I mean, it's, some people can watch for the strategy, which is fascinating. But if you're not watching for the strategy, watch for the pants. And it's coincidentally,
right.
We're just talking about the Norwegian biathlon team. It's the Norwegian team that has the, the crazy pants. It's, you know, Norway
it's
has
hilarious.
Given. Yeah, no, they're nuts. And I think I think last Olympics, did they get a silver or bronze? But they had the pants, the nutty pants. And three things come out of Norway that I can remember. There's the biathletes, the shooting and the cross country skiing. There's the crazy pants, and then there's Dordi Nordby, who's the all time best name for a female curler. and she was a little 4'8" spark plug that had a gravelly voice. And she'd scream the curling calls, one of my favorite names and female curling players, curling participants of all time, Dordi Nordby. She's a great skip. Yeah. Anyway, didn't mean to, I just was adding on to your curling because I think there's a lot of fun to be had watching curling in the Olympics.
There is. And I have an appreciation for it after having watched the Brier and some other things over the years, and I actually very much look forward to it. It's just it's a fun one to watch. That's my number five.
It's tremendous, and as I said, that one is a couple notches up for me at number three.
Okay, well, what do you have in between there at number four?
At number four, I have, and I've kind of combined them because they're not the same sport, but they're kind of similar, and that's bobsleigh. And it's bobsleigh, luge, and skeleton. And all three are just,
well, I'm just going to preempt this and say that I have luge and skeleton together at number four as well. So,
well, bobsleigh, luge, skeleton for me, number four, tremendous. There's always the element, sadly, the element of danger there, as we've seen quite recently. But it's the speed is ridiculous, for any of the events, particularly the skeleton, when you're going down head first, the speed that they get on those tracks is nuts. And out of, I guess I do curling, and hockey, of course, but bobsleigh is something I always wanted to do. Yeah, no. In fact, a few years ago when I went to Calgary Olympic Park, and I was lucky enough to get a couple of laps on the speed skating oval, just
nice.
The hockey skates, not the long bladed, although that would have been fun to try too. But went to Calgary Olympic Park to go down the. You can, at least at that point, you could. Buy and pay for a trip down the run in a modified bobsleigh that I'm sure had a lot of padding and whatnot in it. but piloting a bobsleigh, and it turned out they were closed for renovations or whatever. So I was disappointed, but that's something that's kind of on a bucket list is to get on and pilot a bobsleigh. I think that would be tremendous, and it's always good fun watching it on during the Olympics.
Absolutely. I mean, for me, it's luge and skeleton, because at least with the bobsleigh, you've got something surrounding most of you, but for luge and skeleton, it's just your body and this little tiny rickety little piece of constructed, you know, metal or whatever between you and this ice as you're careening through the course, especially skeleton where you're going head first, which that would just absolutely petrify me. So I love the speed. I love the intensity. I love the excitement of those. And so that's why they're my number four.
Yeah, mine too. Mine at number four. And I, you know, I've added bobsleigh in there because the speed of that, particularly on the four-man bobsleigh, when they have to, you know, they just explode out of the starting blocks, and they have such a short time. And then getting in mm-hmm. part is always pretty cool, the way all that's choreographed and they all duck down. Yeah, it's just and somehow managed to pilot it to get to the bottom. It's the only one, you know, the only one I have trouble with is the luge. I don't even know what it's called. The doubles. It's a little awkward.
It's to be very comfortable with one another.
Yeah, apparently, yeah.
So we know curling is your number three.
And yours?
Mine is alpine skiing. Again, okay. For the speed, the careening at high speeds, I can't ski to save my life. I tried skiing once and it didn't go so well. And so, you know, whether it's, you know, slalom or giant slalom or the super G, I mean, it just the speed at which those athletes come down those mountains many times, especially when you can hear the ice on the course, if it's been super cold and the course has gotten icy. I mean, it's just half the time they're barely on one ski, much less on two. I really enjoy all of the alpine skiing events. I think they're really exciting to watch.
And it's, for Canada, it's, you know, you always refer back to downhill skiing was Canada's sport one at one time, and particularly in the era of the Crazy Canucks, the Dave Murray, Dave Irwin, I'm going to forget, Ken Reed, Steve Podborski, they dominated both the Worlds and the Olympics for a long time, and they were just crazy nutty guys who you know, you have to be a bit on the edge to it's not a sport where you can do a safe run. You really have to push the envelope, and that's what makes that sport so exciting.
Absolutely. I really like it. Okay, so that brings us to number two. What did you have as your number two option?
Number two, I have the short track speed skating. And
you copied.
Not, is that what you have? It's not that the long track is not interesting, but it's just not as, I mean, it's more of an endurance kind of thing. Whereas mm-hmm. the short track speed skating, it's the crash up derby. It's the roller derby kind of.
Oh, yeah.
It is roller derby, essentially. And there's always mm-hmm. chance for a crash, and the Canadians are usually pretty good. Charles Hamlin, I think he's got like three golds, and will be competing again this year. It's just an exciting, fun event. The team sport and the individual, that the what do they call it, the relay. And the individual, both. They're any short track speed skating. I like, and it's at my number two, and apparently, you're number two as well.
It's true, and I actually include both the long track and the short track. I have more of an affinity for the short track just because of the, you know, the intensity of and the, you know, the crash ups that happen and all of those kinds of things, and having spent plenty of Olympics watching Apollo Ohno, and who was just absolutely masterful at those events, really made me a fan of short track, but I like long track as well for the endurance. As you have on your bucket list that you would have loved to have been a bobsleigh participant, I've always wanted to be a speed skater. I think it was a tremendous workout, but it's the long track is very graceful. It is an endurance sport, but it's a very graceful sport. It's fun to watch. I'm amazed at the times that these men and women log, being able to cover the distance that they do in the amount of time that they do. So for both the long track and the short track, I really, really, really very much enjoy watching both of those. So that's my number two.
Sounds great.
Which means
so you can
which
do
means
number
that,
one.
Yeah. Well, I'm guessing that we have the same thing as number one. So back to that hockey sport.
You have one
thing
of those
pipe
events?
No, I don't. But I don't have the disdain for them that you do. I have tried snowboarding. I am worse at snowboarding than I am at skiing. I had one afternoon of a snowboarding lesson, and I walked out of there with a sprained wrist, and I didn't do anything close to what the guys on a half pipe do. I can't. So I give them credit for what they do. But it doesn't crack my top five. But hockey does. And hockey's my number one, obviously.
You said hockey.
Yes, because I'm not going to say ice hockey because good. I'm sorry, Olympics, and I'm sorry, America. But when you say hockey, it's implied that you're talking about the version of hockey that is played on the ice, not field hockey, not road hockey, not roller hockey, not inline hockey, whatever. It's ice hockey.
If you start a conversation with the term ice hockey as a Canadian, we're going to judge you. I'm sorry, we're going to judge you.
Mm-hmm.
It's hockey. It's just hockey. But yes, I have that at my number one as well.
Excellent.
But it's going to be different. It's going to be odd.
It's going to be different.
Like, I say it just because it's hockey, but I don't even know what to expect this time. We won't get into the whole decision. It's either going to, well, I think it's as you've said, it's providing opportunities for guys that wouldn't otherwise get the opportunity and to be brought back into relevance, I guess. I think the NHL is going to regret it no matter how it turns out.
Yeah.
But you know, for the gold medal, a shootout U.S. Canada, if it's Brian Gionta versus Ben Scrivens, I guess we'll get excited. I guess so.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, you know, it's you're right. It's not going to be the same tournament. It really isn't. And I feel badly for the guys who do play in the NHL who look forward to representing their country every year and every 4 years and don't have a shot at doing that this year. And I agree. I think the NHL will regret this decision one way or another. But I still think at the end of the day, it's an international hockey tournament and people are going to rally around the guys who are representing their country. Canadians are going to rally around their Canadian players. Americans are going to rally around their U.S. players, the Swedes, the Finns, it's the Russians. Not necessarily the Russians or the athletes who are, what is it officially? The athletes who are competing on behalf of Russia. Mm-hmm. Something like whatever it is. I think that people will enjoy the tournament more than they think they're going to. It's just not going to be the same, but it still is going to be my number one event for the whole shebang. I don't think hockey starts until next week though. I think that's the second half of the, I don't know. I could be wrong. They're doing, I think they're doing pre-Olympic games already, maybe?
Yeah, I saw Canada and Latvia in pre-Olympic candidate that won 2-0, I think. But you mentioned, you listed the hockey superpowers, Canada, U.S., Russia, Finland, Sweden, and maybe throw the Czechs in there. But, you know, we might, who knows, given the how teams had to be assembled, we might see some surprises. We might see some
Slovakia, Switzerland.
Well, yeah. Who knows? Who knows what's going to happen?
South Korea.
Well, I think we know that's not going to happen. But
they have a team.
Yeah, isn't it joint? Or is the joint team, or is that the women's that have a joint team with the North Koreans? I don't know.
Japan has a team too. That's always entertaining.
And most of these teams have Canadian coaches, which is interesting.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
The Japanese team actually is the only one who will only be participating in the women's hockey competition. So we won't see a men's Japanese hockey team. Just the ladies.
But like I say, I think we're going to see some, on the men's side, we're going to see some surprises. We're going to see some what we would consider upsets. And we may even see one of these non-traditional teams squeak in for a medal. I don't know. I just, it's hard to know what to expect.
Yeah. And that'll be kind of the part of the fun of it is not knowing what to expect. So hopefully we're pleasantly surprised with some entertaining action. Well, we want to hear what your top five are. That was our top five for the Winter Olympic events. Be sure to tweet us at the AHL Report, which, or even just tell us what's your favorite. I'm sure most of you are going to probably say hockey, but what are your favorite Winter Olympic events? We'd love to know what you think. And of course, as we mentioned, be sure to follow along on Twitter at the AHL Report all week long as we are reporting from Binghamton, Utica, and Syracuse while the Laval Rocket are on the road. You can also be sure to find Rick on Twitter at AllHabs, and you can find me on Twitter at FlyersRule. And we will be back again next Tuesday with another edition of From the Press Box. We'll have a breakdown of this road trip and some audio, I'm sure, from interviews that we do with many of the Laval Rocket players. In the meantime, be sure to tune in to our other podcasts on Rocket Sports Radio. We've got Habs Unfiltered, Hab a Listen, and of course Habs 360, which happens live every Saturday afternoon at 2 p.m. with Rick and Chris G. You can call in and join the conversation on that podcast since it is live. And as always, Rick, this was a lot of fun. Thanks for joining me again this week.
Tremendous. We'll see you at the rink for the road coverage this week and then back here next Tuesday for From the Press Box.
That sounds great to me. Thanks so much, folks, for tuning in and for listening. And we will see you right back here next week for another fantastic edition of From the Press Box.
You bring your phone everywhere. Work, school, the movies. Now you can bring it to an Xfinity store for an easy way to switch to Xfinity Mobile, a new kind of network designed to save you money. You can get up to 5 lines of talk and text included with Xfinity Internet at no extra cost, so all you pay for is data. It's never been easier to switch to Xfinity Mobile and keep the phone you love. Click here to see how. Sorry, I gotta take this. Restrictions apply. Limited to select mobile phones. Requires activation of a new line of Xfinity Mobile. Up to 5 devices per account. New Xfinity Internet customers limited to up to 2 lines pending activation of Internet service.